Coming up on Tech News Today, Vine gets a little porny, Barnes & Noble hits hard times, and the next iPad release. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, January 28th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell last year's gadgets. Find out what your used iPad, MacBook, iPhone, Galaxy S, and other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zaktar.
The unmuted Chad Johnson.
And Jason Dow still off for a couple more days. Happy to have Chad with us, though. We're going to start off, as we always do, with the top 10 stories of the day in the news fuse. When the video app Vine launched, the chat roulette jokes came fast and furious. Sadly for Vine, the jokes became naked reality when a pornographic video showed up as the editor's pick, placing it at the top of the home screen for every Vine user. The video was removed, and Twitter, which owns Vine, told The Verge it appeared as an editor's pick due to human error.
Or a prank. Apple's iOS and Android platforms together capture a record 92% of worldwide smartphone shipments. That's for the last quarter of 2012, and according to data by Strategy Analytics. Android alone took in 152.1 million shipments just last quarter, which is almost double the 80.6 million it shipped in 2011. The market share for Android also jumped 70% from 51% a year before, and Android vendors shipped nearly 500 million smartphones in 2012. So what I'm saying is Android's dead.
Goodbye, Android.
Lenovo says its CFO's comments about potentially acquiring RIM were taken out of context. The company says its CFO was speaking broadly about M&A strategy, and his comments were consistent with all of Lenovo's previous statements on M&A. We'll all have to put our dreams of ThinkBerrys away for now.
I'd like to think that the quote was, there are lots of companies we'd like to buy. RIM is not one of them, and they just kind of clipped out, we'd like to buy RIM. News out of China should make Nintendo, Sony, and Microsoft salivate a little bit, or maybe even a lot. A source from China's Ministry of Culture told China Daily the government is reviewing its policy of banning game consoles. The ban was issued by seven ministries a decade ago and would need the approval of all the parties involved to be repealed.
Sovereign Software is a company that seems like it's in the e-commerce business, but really it's in the business of filing patent lawsuits against e-commerce businesses. The company's plan to extract a patent tax of about 1% of revenue from a ton of online retailers, big companies like Nordstrom, Home Depot, and Radio Shack, was shut down last week by Newegg and their legal team, who won an appeal ruling that invalidates the three patents that Sovereign used to start this patent war.
RIM announced its BlackBerry World Store will be packed to the gills with apps, music, movies, and TV shows. Music from BlackBerry World will be DRM-free and available in 18 countries. Video will be available for rent or purchase in the U.S., Canada, and the U.K. Will you want to watch any of these videos from BlackBerry World? Yep, because RIM has the major players signed up, ABC, NBC, Sony Pictures, Walt Disney, and more.
When Apple surprised us with a new iPad model last autumn, folks wondered what would happen to the usual spring launch of new iPads. Well, rumor mill to the rescue, 9 to 5 Mac says they have word from sources that Apple will release a new version of the 4th-gen iPad. The only difference, 128 gigabytes of capacity instead of the current max of 64, and a $799 starting price for that model.
Happy Data Privacy Day, everybody. Yay. In celebration, Google's posted to its official blog some initiatives it's taking to protect consumers from intrusions on their privacy and inform them about intrusive activity. These include further work for modernization of the U.S. Electronic Communications Privacy Act, making Google's reports on government requests for information more transparent for users, and continuing to strictly review government requests for personal information of users.
Do you have to celebrate Data Privacy Day alone, like in private? Is that part of the thing? One Samsung employee is dead and four hospitalized after a gas leak at the company's semiconductor plant in Hwasong, Korea. According to The Verge, a local government official told Asia E! That Samsung is being investigated to see if it violated any laws in the reporting of the leak and proper equipping of safety gear. Yonap reports the dead worker was not wearing a hazard suit, only a gas mask. The other four injured workers all had hazard suits on.
Jonathan Colton re-released his cover of Baby Got Back to Google Play, Amazon, and iTunes. He says the track is, quote, a cover of Glee's cover of a Sir Mix-a-Lot song, which is to say it's exactly the same as my original version, end quote. The television show Glee covered Baby Got Back and used Colton's arrangement without any credit. Colton says that he's giving away all the proceeds from the sales of the track between now and the end of February to the It Gets Better Project and the VH1 Save the Music Foundation.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Gazelle. If you got a new iPhone, maybe you got a Samsung Galaxy S3 for the holidays. Maybe you were really good, got a new iPad or a MacBook. Before you give away that old gadget or throw it in a drawer or, you know, out in the garage like I do, find out what it's worth at Gazelle.com. You can turn those old gadgets into some cash. And give that gift to yourself. Gazelle makes selling last year's gadgets fast and simple. You might think, oh, I don't want to go to all the trouble of listing and finding a buyer. No, go to gazelle.com, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Tell Gazelle the condition of your gadget. They'll even buy broken iPhones and iPads. Be honest about it. Get a risk-free offer for your gadgets and then lock in that quote for 30 days while you think about it. You got 30 days to decide whether you want to send them the gadget. Once you do, in a couple of days, they'll send you cash by check or PayPal. So go to gazelle.com now and get an offer for your old iPhone, your Android, your BlackBerry phone, your iPad, other Apple products. Do it today because gadgets don't get more value every day. They lose value every day that you wait. And payment is fast and it's trustworthy. I've used it a lot. Gazelle has paid $50 million to over 500,000 customers. Free shipping. Most items even qualify for a free box and fast processing with no listing hassles. So go check it out. Gazelle.com. Sell your last year's gadgets today at gazelle.com. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. All right, joining us to talk about the stories of the day, we're happy to have back Peter Wells, editor of Mac Talk in Australia, which means he has to get up ungodly early. So we always appreciate you making the effort, man. How are you doing this morning?
I'm very well, Tom. Thank you so much.
And how, as we must always ask when we have an Australian or a New Zealander on, how is tomorrow?
Tomorrow's fine. We've just been enjoying the Australia Day long weekend over here. So tomorrow's probably actually going to be a little bit hungover and tired, but it's looking okay.
Excellent. Well, happy Australia Day.
Why, thank you, sir.
Let's start out with some hardcore porn.
As we always do on Monday.
This is what's happening over at Vine. Sarah, tell us how did this happen?
Well, as you mentioned in the news, Fuse, it appears to be just a simple user error. What happened is Vine is obviously a very new service. This was the service that Twitter bought before it had actually launched, and it allows you to create a video collage of up to 6 seconds of video, and people are having a lot of fun with it. And I know my Twitter feed is completely overrun with Vine links that I'm not clicking on anymore, but the thing about Vine is that when you first sign up, and it's very easy to do so, Editor's Picks is one of the sections that's supposed to not only get you familiar with how the service works, oh, cool, here's some neat things that other people are creating, but allows you to find new content. And there was a pornographic video that was right up there, front and center. Now, it said this content may be objectionable to some people, or, you know, I don't remember the exact wordage, but there was a warning. But those are the sorts of things where, you know, it doesn't say this is porn. So a lot of people clicked through and sure enough, holy crap, that's what they saw. So this is not really something that you had to dig for. This was very, very right in front of you when you first sign up for Vine or when you start clicking around, you know, in the explore section. So obviously not a good thing. The company has since said human error resulted in a video with adult content becoming one of the videos in Editor's Picks. Upon realizing this mistake, we removed the video immediately. We apologize to our users for the error. Okay, isolated incident as far as an editor's pick choice goes. However, and I did this for the purposes of research for the show only, if you search certain hashtags on Vine, such as porn, there's a lot of that going on. Now, is this Vine's fault because Vine is merely the vessel for other people, you know, for users' creativity? Well, you could say, you know, that's the sort of thing you could, if you look on Instagram hard enough. By the way, there is no hashtag porn on Instagram because I tried to find something equivalent. Then, you know, there is stuff. This is the sort of thing that's very hard to get rid of. However, just recently, 500pix got their iOS app pulled from the App Store because Apple said it featured pornographic images and material. It's a clear violation of the Apple Store guidelines, and that they had received complaints from customers about possible child pornography. Apple says, we've asked the developer of 500pix to put safeguards in place to prevent pornographic images and material in their app. So that's a specific case of an app that, because of what the users were doing, and the app was, I guess, not able to police it or stay on top of it enough, the content, Apple said, until we feel like users can be safer here, we just can't have this in the App Store. I don't know. Do we see something like this possibly happening with Vine, too? Vine's very hot right now because it's less than a week old. But, you know, this is video.
Well, I mean, Vine's owned by Twitter, and Twitter doesn't want to take off Apple at all. So if they're smart, they're probably going to try to change terms of service, say you can't have this kind of stuff up there. They're probably going to hide a bunch of this. That I'm assuming that hashtag is going to disappear. It's going to be very hard to find, I'm pretty sure, probably the next week.
Yeah, it looks like, I mean, if you just compare something like Vine to a very popular network like Instagram, and really the reason I'm comparing the two is Instagram is photos and Vine is videos, but the apps are set up in a really similar way. If you're familiar with one, it's not too hard to figure out how to use the other. But Instagram has clearly put the kibosh on a lot of really popular hashtags that could be misused, like sex and porn and boobs. And I looked them all up. They don't exist on Instagram. Vine is just not, you know, they're not big enough yet. They're still pretty new. And yeah, as you mentioned, Ayaz, Twitter and iOS are more deeply integrated than ever. I mean, Apple and Twitter are, at least it seems on the surface, pretty simpatico. And Twitter doesn't want Apple to become upset with it and have repercussions on any of the apps that's under the Twitter umbrella. By the way, I mean, Twitter itself, there's all sorts of objectionable stuff that people are sharing on Twitter, links to things, that sort of thing. Apple couldn't possibly just say anything that's ever, you know, that porn has ever passed through in the App Store can't be in the App Store anymore. But that's a slippery slope. You know, just 500pix seem like they were singled out unfairly. Tom, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it does sound like that because honestly, this would never have come up if it hadn't ended up as an editor's pick somehow. And I'm more interested to find out how that happens. Was it an internal person? Did somebody get access? I mean, if it was human error, this isn't an algorithm that spit out the wrong thing, right? So I want to know how that happens. But otherwise, the porn stuff is kind of hard to find. You have to search for it. And 500pix had an even better defense. They said, not only do you have to search for it, not only do we have warnings, just like Vine, but we actually restrict it to being what we consider to be art. So photographers who are taking nudes is only, we don't actually allow, when we see porn, we kick it off of 500pix. So they're even being more restrictive. So as I think you're right, we're probably going to see Vine have to crack down in the face of all of this kind of public relations. Peter, what do you think?
Oh, the whole story is really fascinating. And I think that there's definitely some kind of connection here between Vine and the App Store because they've already pushed out three updates, small bug fix updates in like the 3 or 4 days that they've been on the store. So they are getting slightly preferential treatment from the App Store approval process anyway, I'd say. But yeah, so it's really interesting that this could have happened, that they could have let this happen. I don't know. I just kind of think that we're getting to the point where Apple needs to differentiate a service that is a video or photo sharing service, which may be used for, you know, nudity and those kind of things, to an app that is, you know, its entire purpose is porn. And I think that Apple really have to start drawing the line there and kind of allowing, obviously they can still say no to the straight out porn apps, but yeah, something like 500pix should never have been kicked.
All right, let's move along to Barnes & Noble, not being a place where you can even find anything objectionable up on a high shelf, or at least a third of the stores you won't be able to because they're going away. Wall Street Journal reports Mitchell Kipper, chief of Barnes & Noble's retail, says the company will close a third of its stores over the next 10 years. Right now they have, according to this article on CNET, 689 stores. They'll reduce that to 450 to 500. That does not include the college stores, the ones that sell textbooks. There's 674 of those. Well, Barnes & Noble has been closing about 15 stores a year, and this would be an average of 10 stores a year, but they've also been opening 30 or more stores a year. So they just close the ones that aren't doing well and open them and open new ones that they think will. However, they only opened two new stores last year, and they've been considering spinning off their Nook division. However, the Nook did not sell very well during the holidays. So this looks like bad news for what was at one time considered to be the only bookstore chain that really had a chance of hanging on, at least at selling new books. Peter, what you said you've been in a Barnes & Noble one time, but just,
yes.
You know, forget the Barnes & Noble aspect of it. If you're a large bookseller like Barnes & Noble, they're doing a lot of things right by emphasizing ebooks and making the Nook. What do you think they should do?
I really don't know what you can do. I mean, this Christmas, I got a couple of books from my sister, and I immediately kind of went home and then just downloaded them for my Kindle because I just don't want to carry around physical books. I don't have physical, you know, I don't have physical media in my house anymore. I don't have CDs or DVDs. So I really don't know what any of these kind of larger booksellers can do. I kind of feel that a Barnes & Noble is just, you know, a couple of steps behind the way of the Blockbuster, that we won't be seeing it around much longer, which is a bit of a shame.
Should Barnes & Noble actually take their strategy involved with the Nook farther? I mean, I think that's why they are still around and Borders isn't, because they were leaning into ebooks a lot better. I don't know. Should Barnes & Noble sell the Kindle? Should they sell other ebooks? Should they really lean into that and try to be the broad ebook retailer instead of just having the Nook?
You can't buy the Nook, I don't believe, in this country. But I mean, I see Kindles every day on the bus. So can you buy the Nook at, you know, Targets and Best Buys and those kind of things over there?
I'm not sure.
I think maybe that could be something to get the Nook out into. I know it sounds almost counterintuitive to get your one product out into other places, but I kind of think maybe that could be the strategy. I have no idea, really.
Well, I mean, clearly the large warehousey store is, even though there are quite a few stores left, right? You know, at least in the U.S., It's not a model that's working going forward. I mean, if they only opened a couple stores last year and they're closing a bunch, well, you know, you have a few more years of that and you don't really have that many more stores. So what is selling? Yeah, get that product into as many places as possible instead of hoping that people will keep coming to this one retail location. And I really do think that Barnes & Noble stores, we're probably going to see, there are certain areas, like, I don't know, Times Square, you know, large urban areas where it's still going to be a store that would be frequented by a lot of foot traffic for a while. But it seems like just the large scale of the large bookstore is a dying model.
And somebody in the chat room called Barnes & Noble up front for Starbucks. I'm like, I remember when those all the coffee selling places would end up in the bookstores. They became very lax about policies. You can just take books and read all day and mm-hmm. have a coffee. I mean, maybe that's the kind of strategy Barnes & Noble needs, or they're going to partner up with colleges. Like when I was going to school, Barnes & Noble is where you got your textbooks. So they drag you in no matter what. You always had to go there. And, you know, textbooks as ebooks are not really taking off in any which way. So maybe that's the way they could continue to do this. If they want to go into the electronics field, maybe they should leverage their partnership with Microsoft a little bit, maybe sell the Surface RT or sell something preloaded with the Nook, or do something that, I mean, the Nook's available for iOS, Android, and Windows 8, but I don't know if that's enough. I don't think they need to carry the Kindle, because I think that'd be shooting themselves in the foot. But they need to get their app out there as much as they can. And it's already out there. So maybe having more devices will help too.
And to answer the question about are they selling the Nook in other places, I did a quick search on Target.com, which is a local chain in the United States. Not a local chain, but a chain in the United States. And they do have
small
Nooks.
Small mom-and-pop store.
Exactly. Exactly. But for us... For us U.S. People, Target's a big store.
And you know where else you can buy the Nook? At Amazon.com. So I don't know. I mean, it seems to make sense, Ayaz, when you say, well, that would be shooting themselves in their foot to sell the Kindle. But it isn't shooting themselves in the foot for Amazon. Amazon's strategy is, we're going to make the Kindle, but we're also going to make the Kindle available on any platform And we're going to sell other things in our store. It's not the rising tide floats all boats. Barnes & Noble's boat is sinking. So I think it would make sense for them to say, hey, we have an in-house brand, which is great, and we'll tell you about it. But we'll get more people in the store if we sell tablets. I think your idea about Surface Pro is great, but sell the iPad too. Sell the Galaxy Tab. Start to become a place to access information. I think they need to broaden out that sort of mission statement. Maybe even sell used books. A few people in the chat room pointed out Half-Price Books, which I used to work at in Austin, Texas, is doing great because they sell used books and remaindered books, and they're just not feeling that same pinch that a store that relies entirely on new books is feeling right now. Speaking of new iPads, though, we've got a new iPad rumor we heard about in the news fuse. Sarah, tell us a little more about this.
128 gigabytes of fourth-gen Retina full-size iPad. Who's excited? That's twice the capacity of what you can buy right now. My initial reaction was, what? No, who needs all that? The thing is like I would call myself a heavy iPad user. I have hundreds and hundreds of apps because I do a lot of research on apps, and I don't have storage issues unless I am, going to be traveling, and so I load up a season of, maybe a show on iTunes, and then all of a sudden, now I can't update anything until I get rid of those video episodes. So I understand how you can max out, but my initial reaction was like, well, that's just huge. So again, this is not a new design. This would simply be an iPad that looks just like the fourth gen iPad that you can get now that was introduced with the iPad mini back in the fall. But twice the capacity, would come in both Wi-Fi and Wi-Fi/cellular versions. And then there'd be some deals for educational institutions as well. The reason that this rumor is gaining some ground is developers found code in iOS 6.1, which is going to be released pretty soon, that points to 128 gigabyte iOS devices. Well, kind of makes sense. Recent folks noticed 120 gigabyte references in Apple's iTunes 11 relaunch as well. So this also might match up with a report that came out a few days ago that the mini isn't going to get a Retina refresh until October. And that's at the point where the full-size iPad, hopefully you guys are staying with me here, because we've got a lot of iPad models now, the fifth-gen iPad would get more of the iPad mini design elements that it doesn't already have. The two look kind of different. So what I'm saying is, back when the mini was released and then the iPad fourth gen Retina got a refresh, a lot of people said, ugh, when's the mini Retina going to be out? I mean, do you want a mini if there's just going to be a new iPad mini in March because that's when Apple launches new iPads? And then other people said, I think the product cycle's changing. Now we're just on a fall schedule now. So if we're waiting until, let's say October, just call it the fall, for a new iPad mini Retina, for example, is this Apple's way of keeping the public satiated? You get a little bit of a bump on the traditional fourth gen iPad in March or, in the spring when people were traditionally used to getting new iPads. You get pricing, which would be $800 for the Wi-Fi only, $929 for the cellular Wi-Fi combo. That is really steep. However, I think, especially if you're watching a lot of video, maybe that 128 gigabyte model looks really attractive to you. Peter, what do you think? Is my theory on product cycles changing sound right?
Yeah, I think the timing sounds right. I mean, if Apple released a Retina iPad mini in March or so, which is what I know some people were really hopeful that would happen, I just think the cries would be amazing. The outrage of people who bought the non-Retina mini would just be deafening. So I think they do have to wait until about October. That makes sense to me to wait a full year cycle until they add Retina to the mini, not only just because of the outrage, but also it's probably damn expensive to do. In terms of the 128 gigabyte iPad, I can kind of see this. It'd be really interesting, actually, if they could release the 128 gigabyte iPad just in time for the NAB conference. And maybe we could see a touch version of Final Cut Pro get released at the same time.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Apple is just off schedule now, that they're not going to do this like everything happens at the same time every year anymore, and so it's going to be more of a logical release schedule. Let's move on to RIM, BlackBerry World Music and Movies. Got a little more detail coming out about this. They're going to be launching it on Wednesday, BlackBerry 10, and the BlackBerry World app store is no longer App World, it's just BlackBerry World. You'll be able to rent or download shows and movies. There will be a music store, no subscription music option, but in 18 countries, including Australia, you'll be able to get music that you can download and buy. You can also get movies only in the US, Canada, and the UK, but many of them after the day after DVD release from all the major studios. TV shows the day after they air in the US, UK, and Canada. They have all the major movie studios and music labels on board for this. They don't have all the cable channels. There's no HBO. There's no Discovery. Maybe those deals will come later. Ayaz, is this what RIM needed to make the playbook valuable? We talked about the fact that you just didn't have the apps and the content. If they get the 700,000 apps they want, and you've got this great, this is a great app store, it sounds like. Is this going to give it the boost it needs?
I mean, it's definitely going to give it a stronger start than the playbook. It's because the playbook came out, beautiful hardware, ran really fast. But there was no apps and there was no content unless you loaded it yourself. And that seemed a little bit tedious. I think this is going to help RIM to be able to have a really great message when they start off, again, with BlackBerry 10. To say, look, yeah, we've taken a long time, but you can get all your content right here. We don't have, like, just three things. We have 70,000 apps. We have the ability to take Android apps and you can run them on this. And with all the content, I mean, it definitely seems like that would have helped the playbook a lot because that was a 7-inch device. When it comes to these, you know, smaller form factors, I don't know how important the media is, but I think their app ecosystem is much more important.
What do you think, Peter? I mean, you're a Mac Talk guy. Does any of this sound attractive to you? Like, hey, maybe I'll investigate BlackBerry a little more.
Hey, look, I've got a playbook. I just have no idea where it is. I mean, this might get me to try to find it. But yeah, look, it's such a great lineup of content, but like you guys were saying, I mean, it just sounds like this would have been so perfect if the playbook had come out with this, because it would have beat the Galaxy Nexus as a really great 7-inch tablet. It could have been so amazing, but, you know, unfortunately, I do think this might be a little bit too late. It's heartbreaking.
Sarah, you're a cord cutter. You got another outlet here, possibly, but you'd need a RIM device to watch it, I guess.
Well, you've got that playbook that you never use. Maybe
Ayaz has it right now.
Yeah, I see.
Well, it's sitting in a box. I'm supposed to do the project.
There's just no other
playbook app.
There's no other way for me to watch any of this great content. So, Ayaz, if I could borrow Tom's playbook, that would
sure
be great.
Sure thing. You got it.
I think that's the key, right? I mean, this is a great app store if you're going to buy a BlackBerry device anyway. But you're not going to buy it to get the access to this content.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, unless for some reason you haven't taken the leap yet, and this it does seem like a really good ecosystem, and you're either a RIM fan it's probably not for me. But I do think, listen, they're late to the game here, but they are doing what they should have done a year ago.
Yeah, no, I agree. Also expanding their media service, this time just for music, is Samsung. What are they doing with Music Hub, Ayaz?
Okay, so Samsung is going to be bringing its Music Hub to non-Samsung devices. This is according to The Next Web, who spoke to Senior VP for Samsung Media Services, TJ Kang. Now, right now, Music Hub is only available for the Note 2 and the Galaxy S3. It's going to expand to other Samsung devices first, including theoretically a refrigerator. I'm not making that up. And then to non-Samsung devices. Now, the Music Hub, if you're unfamiliar with it, used to be M-Spot. Samsung bought that. It lets you upload your music, does a scan to match. It accesses Samsung's 19 million song catalog. You can purchase songs from it. It also does music recommendations, unlimited plays, no ads. And the timing for a wider rollout of Music Hub depends on getting all these deals in place. So you're looking at this year for this. Peter, do you think Samsung's going to be the Music Hub is going to be a major player in the music market, or is it just going to be one of these also-rans?
Yeah, I don't know about major player. I'm totally fascinated by this, and I love the idea that it will be available on so many devices. I was really reluctant to sign up to iTunes Match because of the fact that it was only available on iOS. But it's an interesting service. I don't know whether I need a music player in my fridge if I've got a tablet on my bench. But, you know, hey, it's cool.
What do you think, Tom? Do you think that this is going to be an iTunes competitor, or is this going to be like Walmart's digital music store that did so well that they closed down?
You know, I think it's the right thing for Samsung to do when they say, we're going to make it available on other devices. I think that's the problem when a device manufacturer comes out with something like this. Unless you're Apple, apparently, then you can lock it into your own devices and nobody cares. But remember, you can get iTunes on Windows, right? So it's not entirely locked down to Apple's own products. Samsung's got the right idea. We want to get in the music business. We want that ability to play music on your Samsung Galaxy S3 to benefit us, but we know people aren't going to uptake on the Galaxy S3 if they can't play it on their other devices. And they're admitting the reality that not everybody's going to live in a Samsung-only universe. And that is one way in which Samsung is differing from Apple here. So I think this is a smart move. Whether Samsung's service actually takes off in these other areas kind of depends on random factors, I think. You know, do enough Samsung device users start taking it up and using it? Do they get some promotional muscle behind it from some music labels that maybe have some exclusive tracks here and there that get people who otherwise wouldn't pay attention to it to try it out? That's the kind of stuff they need. But they've got the basics right, I think.
Sarah, Samsung's really more of a products company. They're not really known for services. Do you think they have enough marketing muscle to make a service like this be in the minds of everybody?
Well, I mean, Samsung devices, like you said, are very popular. So I think that if this is something that could be proven on Samsung devices, and I know that the non-Samsung devices part of it is very interesting to people, but I think that's where the evangelism would have to come from. People who have Samsung devices, and there are quite a few, more all the time, saying, oh, this is the best service. Oh, yeah, iTunes does this and that, but here's what Samsung has done really well, and it looks nice, and let me show you. That way, then it becomes a bit more of a household name for media, for people who don't have Samsung devices that say, oh, I can have everything that my friend has on the Samsung device. Cool, I will do that. That's sort of how I see this playing out, because otherwise, I think it's a little bit odd to think of Samsung as the place where you're getting your media unless you've already bought into that hardware.
All right, let's finish up with the Wii U causing one developer to say, it's so cool, I'm not putting my game out on it.
That's pretty much what Crystal Dynamics creative director said. Noah Hughes was giving an interview. He's saying he's not going to bring Tomb Raider to the Wii U because he wanted to give players the same experience across platforms. So the Xbox, PC, and the PlayStation. He goes, quote, I think something like the Wii U often asks you to do something unique based on a unique interface. That's something as a gamer I love, but it's something you don't want to do half-heartedly as a developer. And that's the reason he's giving for not bringing Tomb Raider to the Wii U. Peter, do you think Nintendo should be worried about not getting Tomb Raider? Could this be the beginning of a trend due to that weird controller?
I think this is a really beautiful political speak here, that the reason he's not developing for a platform that no one seems to be buying is because it's too unique. But yeah, no, I guess it's a bummer. I don't play Tomb Raider. I'm not really a fan of that franchise. But for me, it's my brother was a huge Nintendo fan. Like, he's got, you know, Zelda underwear and stuff like that. And he hasn't even bought a Wii U. And I think Nintendo should be more worried. Well, yeah, I think Nintendo should be more worried about the fact that they've lost their total kind of rabid fanboy base more than they've lost Tomb Raider.
Tom, what do you think? I mean, is the tablet controller causing problems for lots of developers? Or do you think this is just a guy saying, yeah, well, I'm going to say nicely that I'm not developing for, as Peter put it, an unpopular console?
Yeah, I think Peter's right. This guy does not want to ruin his relationship with Nintendo, so he's not going to come out and just say, like, yeah, platform's not very popular, kind of sucks, why bother? But that does seem to be what's behind this. On the other hand, it's only with the Wii U that we've seen the rising number of big titles made for Nintendo closer to the release of everything else. With the Wii, there were many. But the Wii U, the one of the big things they were trying to tout was, hey, we've got a lot of these big name titles that you're not used to seeing on Nintendo. So it's kind of, part of me says, well, that's Nintendo, right? You don't expect all the titles to be made for the Wii U. And I think that's why this is getting press, is that Nintendo was trying to say it's going to be different now. We're going to have the Zeldas and the Marios, but we're also going to have these titles that you think of as being hardcore games for other consoles on our console. And this is a guy saying, yeah, not so much. The idea that the gamepad is just too cool and we don't want to do it wrong, it belies it, because you're saying, like, well, okay, you didn't want to develop it because you wanted to make sure that you have the right experience. Well, now you have no experience. Is that better than not having the right experience? I don't know.
Sarah, do you think Nintendo's going to try to spin this and be like, we're so unique, our games are not on other platforms because we have this controller? So that's not going to be the same run-of-the-mill game.
Sure, they could do that, but they need everyone to buy into it. It sounds more like a nuisance to me. And I'm not a hardcore gamer enough to feel like I can really weigh in on this, because I don't even have any standalone game consoles. But Nintendo is just, they just seem like they're floating off into their own little world more so than ever.
I'll be honest, I haven't taken my Wii U out of the box since I moved, which was three and a half weeks ago. It's up there. It's ready to go. I mean to do it, but it's just not something that I've had a reason to make. Oh, I better pull that out because we want to, you know, just it's one of those things. Let's move on to the happier land of the randomizer. A pen that translate words that you underline is being developed by the folks making the Ivy Guide. That's the name of it. Designers Shijan, Sunjia Hao, and Lee Kay say the Ivy Guide will keep users in the habit of making marks and also create a continuous reading experience. The demonstration video is up on Mashable.com. And what happens is you've got this little this foam-filled insert that goes over any pen, and then it's got a USB charger. And when you underline a word, it notes that you're underlining and it displays a translation of that word above the word on the page. Now, I love the idea of this being optical recognition, see a word, translate it, put the Chinese word down. It only does English to Chinese right now. But you have to actually mark up your book.
Well, right now this is only a concept stage. So I'm thinking is the thing Barnes & Noble should back. So that way you can buy books and translate on the go. And that way you can keep buying paper books.
Yeah, I honestly, they should be looking at stuff like that, right? They should be looking at the pen that takes notes and stores it in USB. And they should be looking at things like this if this ever does come to market. I'm not sure. I know this is just a concept. I'm just still, I guess if you're a student, it's great for underlining and then translating. I'm not quite getting.
But you're still marking up a book that brings down the like resale value of it. Yeah. You know, remember? Well, at least when I was in college, it's like, you know, when you bring back your book, they flip through it and they give you less money if you made a bunch of notes.
So it needs to be erasable ink.
Right.
There we go.
Yeah. Well,
and when you bring up Barnes and Noble, the whole point is that they can't sell books as much anymore. People are buying e-books. This doesn't help you with an e-book.
It's funny, I would buy the books that had the markings in it. That way I wouldn't have to take my own notes. But I guess you can't do that with ebooks,
but
can
then
you?
You're okay. Only, and you know what, I'm not even going
to. Get the grade of the previous owner that way.
You look for the one that has the best notes. See, you can browse while in the bookstore.
All right, let's move on to the calendar. What's happening there, Sarah?
Well, you know, right when we were talking about iOS 6.1 and that, you know, it was coming soon, a couple of people in the chat room said, no, it's out. Yeah, it's actually just a few minor fixes, a couple new features, but 6.1 is live. Microsoft is launching the new Office on tomorrow, Tuesday, in Bryant Park, New York. Microsoft had released Office 2013 to manufacturing back in October and said they were going to allow the last bits to be commercially available in Q1. So they made good on that. Amazon is reporting its earnings tomorrow. And also a reminder, I mentioned this last week, but London's Tube, their subway system will no longer be free starting tomorrow, although Virgin, Everything Everywhere, and Vodafone customers get to retain their free access. So congrats to all of you.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
We've got a message from George in the Bronx. He says, hello to Tom, Ayaz, Jason, especially Sarah. Glad you're feeling better, Sarah. I'm sorry this is a bit late, but I wanted to comment on Apple's earnings and the unfair way the company is treated by the financial analysts and then reported by the press. The first is that I think that Apple should be judged by how well it does on what it promises and not what anybody else thinks they should be doing. Did Tim Cook deliver on almost everything he promised at the earnings call 3 months ago? The answer is more or less yes. Did he promise the moon and the stars and not deliver? No. Second, Steve Jobs decided years ago when he pulled Apple out of Macworld that he and he alone would decide when a product would be announced and when it would ship. Tim Cook appears to be following that same idea. This makes sense to me, since it is his company and he is the only one that has all the information needed to make that decision and the only one that has the right to access all that information and make that decision.
Well, George, I mean, certainly what you're saying sounds reasonable, but that Apple's not the only one that Wall Street does this to. Wall Street sets their own expectations relative to the expectations that the company sets on purpose because they don't want companies to just basically dog it. And some people accuse Apple of that. Like, you constantly set your expectations low so that you can always exceed them. You need to have an independent check on that to say, okay, let's try to make sure they're close to reality. And then there's also the idea that even if Apple says this is the target we're going to meet and we meet it, maybe that target isn't a good target. Maybe it's the growth is too slow. And I think that's the criticism here. But, Peter, do you have a perspective on this?
Look, I find the whole thing fascinating. I have no idea how the stock exchange works, so I'm not going to comment on that. But I do love the fact that, Apple can have the most profitable year in human history and still get punished. I don't understand how that works. If someone can explain that to me, I'd be fascinated.
Well, I can't explain it. I'm not going to say that that's what's happening at this point and that George isn't ultimately right, that maybe they're being too harsh on Apple. But let's say that a stock has been having a really great run and it's overvalued. They can still have a really good quarter, but when it's slower than previous really good quarters, everyone starts to realize, wait a minute, this stock, it should still be very valuable, but it's too valuable, and the stock starts to come back down. And that's what a lot of people are saying with Apple is, it's not that Apple isn't valuable, it's still very valuable, even at the lowered stock price that it has now. It's just that it was overvalued before. Other people say, no, when you look at the P&E ratio, this stock is still undervalued. And so this is ridiculous to be punishing it.
Yeah, I made that same point on our show a couple of days ago, and someone pointed out, though, that Google is trading at 660. So, if it can be, I don't know, is that unfair that Apple decided to be valued less than Google?
That's what the free market has said. I don't know. Yeah, no, it's a fair point. Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for this episode of Tech News Today. Peter Wells, thank you so much for joining us. Let folks know where they can find you on the internet and where they can find Mac Talk and all the good stuff you do.
Yeah. So MacTalk.com.au, check that out, or just follow me on Twitter at Fulltime Casual. I'm very, very charming.
Excellent. He is. I back that up. And also a gentleman for being willing to get up so often and be on the show. Really appreciate it, man.
Always a pleasure.
You can find us on our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com, place to go to suggest stories you'd like us to discuss. We look at that. We look at the number of votes for ideas of what to put in our show each and every day. Be one of the folks that helps us determine the lineup, technewstoday.reddit.com. You can also find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call, leave us a phone number, or leave us a voicemail at our phone number, which is 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll be back tomorrow with an all-new episode. See you then.